Talking, I want to finish up Datim Achadashim and get on to Engage Yeshivish and then talk about the final. Also, I repeat, if there's anyone out there who has any comments in the listening world on the web, please feel free to email them in at this point. And I did get one the other yesterday about why the Rav isn't being covered, and it's only because I ran out of time at this point. So possibly I might do it in my living room and put it up anyway, an extra 2-3 classes on the Rav. So instead of being whatever 28 classes, it'll be 35. Just so theoretically, like put out all my notes. Yes. Because I didn't want you to hawk about the Rav. Let's leave it at that. The Rav is a very fine gadol philosopher and other things. What passes for discussion, on the other hand, is very far from either him or his books. Okay? Yes? Yes. Now ask. Yes, ask the questions. Yeah, the army created it. I mean, each one's got a local story of how they came to be.
I think it's because of their, like, without the King of the Shiva and the Shiva of the Shapo, that they're the ones that think about the program.
Predominantly. Yeah, predominantly. Okay.
Also, between, like, the people we're talking about, what's their views on, like, you know, gender, women, homosexuality, how did you deal with Rosh Hashanah? I'm not sure.
Okay, on gender, let's go deal with that broadly. Reb Kook talks about women are all regesh, and how it's the pride of Bnei Yisrael to only be regesh and not to be disturbed by Talmud Torah. For this, when that gets played up in the Merkaz world, on this one they are looking to figures like Rav Soloveitchik to say, yes, women can do tashbap. Women can do more learning. Kolot, one of the things that got started was Kolot by Hanukahat, who does wonderful programs now for women, and women should be learning and exploring things themselves. Beyond that, the Datim Achadashim have an idea that there is a special women's way of learning. They still have not gotten, they don't become Americans, they still think like Israelis with a gender differentiation, Merkaz style, in that women can now bring agadata and other things into their learning in ways that men can't, and they're going to ask different questions than men ask.
Are they going to ask the same one? Is it in addition to? Or is it
in addition to. So you can read the volumes that Kolech has put out in terms of, you know, substantive women's learning. In terms of something that deals with some of the tensions in the air between the Merkaz approach and the Datim HaChadashim, taken from the Chadashim's point of view, is next year I'll know more. And it's got the Hebrew title of the book. It's about the Midrashah at Bar Ilan. Someone did a study on it already. Yeah, somewhere else, but I've got the name of it in Hebrew. In terms of prayer, the know that Tova Halbertal started Shira Chadasha in the German colony, with women doing Kabbalat Shabbat and women getting Aliyot. That's more indicative of the German colony than it is of the girls who come from Renan and Kfar Saba to go to Kolech. So that should take care of your first question. We'll get to Tamar Ross in a question in a minute. Yeah?
Just in place of like, was there any type of counter opposition to Rav Avner that they had to be
There is a complete reaction to go, unlike the Merkaz world, to reject that you're being brought up in Kedoshim to you, to wear pants, to wear your t-shirts, to go out of your way to show that's not our world.
It is in
reaction, yeah. If you want some nice chapters in Yair Shelag's Hadakim HaChadashim, another book you should read of Miluim, and Hadakim HaChadashim by Yair Shelag. He writes for Haaretz. What? Yeah. But it's on the real, like on the street level. And, you know, it deals with how people change their dress. And how girls in Oprah in X year dressed like this, and 2 years later they all started wearing pants.
Well, I mean, the kibbutz had that too,
dressed like that. Okay, but now how it's now spread back to the people who were ex Merkaz education. Okay, next. Okay, that once again we find you can go read Rav Sherlo's responses on the web. He tries to be sensitive, he tries to be caring, and that itself is a novelty. The one who pushes the envelope here is Admiel Kostman from Bar Ilan. He's in the Talmud department. He wrote a book on, very similar to Boyarin's type thinking, called Masechet Gvarim, dealing with the status of men and love between men in the Gemara, and he writes erotic poetry, including homoerotic poetry, as a Talmud professor in Bar Ilan, and he's seen as very risque by many. He's the one who pushes the envelope on these issues. Your question now is very karega in terms of how far they're really willing to go. So at the last World Congress of Jewish Studies, there was actually a panel with Kostman and several of these other names on the panel at the Academic World Congress of Jewish Studies, because they're the only ones who sponsored it. But know that the panel appeared like 2 days before on this an Israeli TV show called Politica. I don't know, Reshet Bet or something. There's a show called Politica in which everyone gets to really scream at each other. What?
Around people?
Yeah. But there's no, as far as I know, no one's really gone forward, you know, with any greater statements than that other than sensitivity, and let's think about it. Okay, what were your other questions? With what? Okay, that's an important question. That's one of the smartest things that Ada did is back in, what are you in? Like in 2003, 2004, Ada sponsored and paid for the Kibbutz Hadati, the Lavi conference. We're giving everybody bags, Orthodoxy HaModerni, you know, really getting everyone to use that term, modern Orthodox, in Israel. And rather than, because originally one of the names thrown around was Tzadach, Tzioni Dati HaChadashim, and other names, but Orthodox HaModerni had to do with the fact that Ada teamed up a little bit with them in the beginning of this millennium, and it went, there was a meeting, and now somewhat it's not sustained, as you're going to see why in a minute.
What about the journal?
What? The journal, right. The journal is now going to be translating back and forth articles between America and Israel in English and Hebrew.
Do they read each other's stuff?
Well, the goal is now to get people to read each other's stuff. Okay? But it's a very, I mean, they get away with in Israel saying things much more liberal than the Ada journal can get away saying. Things that are much more historically and sociologically influenced, that don't go over here as well. Or even the fact that there was a debate between Rav Berman and and the journalist Yair Shelag, who I mentioned before from Haaretz, at what? No, don't hear what he would scream at me for that one. Is a debate at the last, at one of these Eidah Kibbutz Adati joint conferences, in which Yair Shalit got up and said, "I'm not modern Orthodox. I'm not Orthodox at all. I don't like the word. Orthodox means I'm old fashioned. I want to keep a doxology. I want to keep things the way they are. Why call myself Orthodox? Let me just call myself Dati Vizeru." To which Rabbi Berman reacted quite strongly, saying, "Don't you understand? There is an orthodoxy. There are halachic standards. There are things we are fundamentalists at." In which Yair Shalig responded, "No, I'm a Dati, but I believe in autonomy. I believe in humanistic values. I don't believe in relinquishing authority to the rabbis." So there are clear points in which they don't speak the same language, because even Orthodoxy, coming as an offshoot from modern and centrism, coming out of YU, still speaks a very rabbinic and halachic language. And then here you can have a journalist saying, "I'm just Dati. We'll see where it goes." Which is very different than the American approach. Okay? So they have trouble putting together bills and putting together really who's art, you know, working together on certain issues. Yeah, go on.
There's a case in the reverse issue of, I don't know if you can
Raim got going.
It's saying that there's such thing as emotional growth and affection.
Right.
And I mean, he follows that, he responds to it.
That's right.
But like, what was like the response of like, you know, the rest of the documents that she...
They accepted it. They felt very comfortable with it. Yeah. Yeah, the people have no problem with those sort of approaches.
What about
it's causing the break is, I mean, one of the things I didn't get to is Rav Amital. Rav Amital put out a little kuntris of four essays defining, saying you have to have a tension between Seder and innovation, and the Dati Chadashim have lost the tension. So, someone like Rav Amital, who's more in touch with that world, has responded saying, you know, they've gone too much lack of Seder, too much Ivadot. What? No, it was at the same time period. It's about the same time period when they were all debating these things in 1999 and 2000. Rosherlo wrote a response with a provocative title called Cheda Egel, the tensions between reform and innovation. So there's a number of these little pamphlets that went around. One more.
Was there towards like Rav Shigar, his views on like his like imposing postmodern ideas on his issues, so to speak?
Mm-hmm.
Was that in a way you think to like the way you were talking to Alistair and Chris used it to like abolish reason and rationalism?
Not at all. No. Here is where Alistair McGath, as an evangelical, says we're in a postmodern age, therefore the only truth can be revelation and God, and therefore we all have to be take the Bible as true. Science isn't the standard anymore. The Israeli Datim HaChadashim version is all about uncertainty, Ivadut, no ground principles anymore, no foundationalism, no true way back to the text. Which, once again, the open orthodoxy are not as comfortable with that sort of, you know, they're happy to talk about, you know, Lakula rather than Ivadot. Yes?
Two questions. Firstly, is it because the skills between the American Open Orthodox and Israeli Lutheran Kashrut?
I think that the bigger question is that all American Orthodox is more halachic and yeshiva educated in a way that they...
I'm saying a different way, that they are more understanding the text.
No, it's just the opposite. Right. Is that they're going to be saying, I want to spend my high school years doing religious film instead of learning Gemara.
And the second question is about the difference between how Israeli Orthodoxy is being dealing with homosexuality in America and how being dealt with in America, whereas you mentioned Professor Kosman, who's going back to the Talmud and showing examples where it's now, in America at least, within the more orthodox, community, it's more of, you know, well, times have changed, you know, there's a new reality, and while it's true that something may have existed then, you know, it's innate now, so whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's two different...
Right, here it's back to the text, using mechkar, using creativity. It's not just times have changed and it's modern or...
There, it was always inherent.
It's there, something fundamental, fundamentally rereading things.
Okay.
Yes. And then I'm going to do some more talking, yeah.
Would you say that part of the reason why the Eidat people are more bound to Allah than the Israelis is because they have to define themselves in a conservative
movement?
No?
Staff?
What?
Tamar Ross suggests it's just the opposite that in America we have to defend yourself against the
Yes, it does. Because you still want to think you're a part of the Orthodox world, in the yeshiva world, in a way that your halacha counts as halacha.
Right.
While in Israel, if you haven't done sava, if you're not part of that, you're saying you're separate tracks. So just the opposite. Meaning, a lot of this concern with the conservative movement has more to do with centrism's ideology than... What?
An interesting point, though.
Than Israel. Israel, you know, once you know you're in the Dati, meaning, because it's very clear, did you go to a Chiloni school, did you go to a Dati Lumi school, or did you go to a Haredi school? And it's really, you know, it's really once you're in that line.
They would need to say we have a lot of norms and you can't look at, whereas.
They never spoke that way in the first place. Kibbutz Adati and others never spoke that way. But again, that's the bigger question that may come out some future year from this course, is why there was no conservative movement. Why is Kibbutz Adati part of the Orthodox movement? Why were there not some of those splits that went on between 1945 and 52 in America? Why did Israel not suffer those same splits? So really, you're reversing what's what. You could have just said, okay, there's a branch of Orthodoxy in America that's going to welcome the Amcha with their, you know, lack of observance and amaratzis, and why it split the way it did, you know, has more to do with America. Okay, I'm going to go on. I'm going to take more questions. Yeah.
Uncertainty.
Uncertainty. Okay. Other people who play a role here will include now Rav Breuer, who maintained a very low profile for many decades with his thing that you can use, see the Bible as different to those, the different documents for the sake of Parshanut, and they all reflect different voices of the divine. He remained a very low profile after, he even wrote in one of the journals that after the Louis Jacob affair, he was scared people will misunderstand what he was doing, that he completely believes Torah Sinai, but there are different textual voices in the text, and our goal is to understand the textual voices. His writings are now coming out both on Tanakh and as a critical replacement for Biblica Hebraica, his own Datsi version, for Datsi Mechadashim. They also now will write articles doing the very history of Orthodoxy itself. So this very course is really modeled for, even though when YU asked me to do it, it was going, and I don't know what they thought they were getting, but this model of it is clearly being modeled after the versions of the Datiyim HaChadashim with a self-reflective look of how we got here. rather than being prescriptive for right now. Rav Benny Lau, Rav from Kibbutz Adatze, has an article defining the Datiyim Achadashim as seeking to bring together irreconcilable things that can never be reconciled, but not with the oscillations of the Ravs, Adam 1 and Adam 2, but just there are absolutely mutually contradictory values going on. He's saying we have to learn to live with it, that we're never going to resolve these things, that we can be putting on different hats and saying different things at different times. Even at the same time, yes. From the mid-90s. And the point is, time will tell. For all you know, they may be stuck in the year 2000 for the next 60 years. I do not know this may continue to progress. They may be speaking with these terms, 50 years after they're not done anymore. It depends what's going to happen. Okay, but let me get to the next one, because you're bringing me to the next article. Hold off on questions right now. Is Yitzhak Geiger wrote an article in Akdamot called the Datiyim Achadashim, and he offered a skira, an overview. He starts off clearly saying Datiyim Achadashim, the goal was to be individualistic, universal, to be a critique of Chug Merkat Harav. And yes, he knows there's the experiential element out there, Chabakuk and the Frikiut. But he's going to concentrate on the intellectual aspects. And he says, since post-67, there were liberal professors out there. There were people, whether it's going to be Eliezer Ravitsky, or it's going to be Benny Shalom, or Shalom Rosenberg. There were liberal voices out there. There were people creating Shalom Achshav and Made Mods. But it didn't resonate. He points out that between post-Oslo, it started resonating. And between 96 and 2002, these conferences on autonomy, multiculturalism, dialogue, insiders and outsiders are going to change the discourse. And to give you his 9 points, even though he subdivides them into many more. First of all, he points out that there's going to be many academics who are going to take leadership roles, meaning the handing over of leadership roles for Kibbutz Adati and Ne'amanei Torah V'Avodah will go to academics. People like Avi Sagi, Dov Schwartz, Avinom Rosenach, Moshe Halbertal, many people who did get their start as, knowing each other in Hartman's, these academics are going to now inherit leadership positions. They're all going to be self-reflective.
Is it number 2
or 1? They're all going to be, they're all going to try to say that halacha, even when it's liberal, is very paternalistic, and look for the inherent political metaphors and ethical metaphors of halacha. Meaning they're going to say that, for example, Tinuk Shenishba is a very paternalistic statement. Even if you can achieve, it's not just, it's looking at your basic categories and metaphors that you're using and how it comes to be. And they want to then bring in the tolerance and liberalism from reading straight Locke, Mill, Hume, and then Michael Walzer, Charles Taylor, even the communitarianism of Michael Sandel, is how do you bring that stuff in to a Jewish perspective? Point number two. Oh, their followers and a lot of the university world under them will have an open tension between the intellectuals and the rabbis. You can openly get up and say, do we agree, do we not agree? Is what the rabbis say our world, is it not our world? You can ask about, you can take your own modern values seriously and say, do the halachic texts, do the rabbinic texts have values that speak to us? Three, they make a requirement of external influence. Meaning they're going to ask university questions and they're going to immediately jump in not just with liberalism, but with postmodernism, postcolonialism, hermeneutics. They're already, each in their own way, seek to be cutting edge. And bear in mind also, as Americans, unlike many of you that have had very good high school educations for English and social studies for your 10th, 11th grade, a lot of these students had very poor high school educations because they went to Americanized high schools in terms, you know, with very little secular studies. So this is all coming from immediately showing up at university and taking intro poli-sci with a very PC professor, and then immediately let's apply it. Next, four. They're all philosophic, not historic or sociological, they're philosophic. They approach halacha as a philosophy. They seek to apply political theory and hermeneutics to halacha. They use as examples of halacha Yeshaya Leibowitz of Soloveitchik, David Hartman, Rav Amiel, and they'll debate halacha from its philosophic positions, not from its from the books of, you know, what to do. You know, even other names, they're going to do the theoretical writings of Rav Moshe Chaim Halevi, or the theoretical writings of Shaul Yisraeli, rather than the more day-to-day psak. Five, they're going to allow history and scholarship as part of their Divrei Torah. Six, they're all going to accept feminism as being the way we think today. Seven, they're all going to think that faith and theology takes precedence over halachic thinking, and that faith and theology takes precedence over halachic thinking, that we're going to solve the problems of the state using philosophy and machshava. And they all agree that values and philosophy affect halacha. In the original article, Geiger broke that into like four categories. Eight, they all believe in personal autonomy, creativity, individuality. And finally, they are all anti-messianic Zionism. They all seek to formulate a dati le'umi position that is not messianic. Okay, that is Geiger's article, a very important article. Yes.
You saw earlier that the rabbis were the philosophers. So why here are the rabbis not the philosophers? In other words, the rabbi was so concerned with milking cows on Shabbos.
Which rabbi are we speaking of? Which rabbi is his philosopher?
There's people called the shame rabbi, they're not the philosophers.
I've lost you. Start again. Which rabbis are philosophers?
You said that there was a tension between the academics and the rabbis, according to you.
Right.
So, I'm using the model of Italy, where we have rabbis who were the philosophers, who were the expositors of the
Kabbalah. No, they're getting up there and assuming that your Rav is your Rav Shchuna, who's concerned about...
So you're saying the rabbi just wrote himself out of the picture about being concerned about looking at Kabbalah and Shabbos.
Well, no, that would be fun. I mean, being concerned with all the things that, for example, centrism is concerned with. I mean, it didn't answer any of the bigger questions.
What about someone like Russia?
He's responding to them, and he's in debate with them, and he has articles back and forth with them.
So, guy, we're looking at the old rabbinate in response to the
back
to the new
rabbinate. Right. So there's a debate in Zayot in which Rav Sherlo writes that we need new rabbis. It's not that we have to go to the academics, we need new rabbis to answer the new questions. Avi Sagi from Bar Ilan writes back saying, no, I think we need the academics to answer some of these questions. Sherlo writes back saying, no, that's not going to happen. And they go back and forth with each other.
But they're all with the same people. They're all responding to each other.
Right. Because that model doesn't exist. NYU's model doesn't exist there. That's right. Even in Bar Ilan, it doesn't exist.
But they do Rabban Smira.
They'll do Rabban, right?
So what's that saying that they're still attaching to the overall, Rabban Smira?
Yeah.
Is there a direction toward movement towards the rabbi doctors here, or they're seen distinctly separate? Because
there's a
easiest perhaps here.
No, there is a movement to... On one hand, the answer I'm going to say is yes. Demographically, yes. But it doesn't fill that function.
You mean even rabbi doctors see themselves as one of the other?
That's right. In Israel, you've got to call it... you can't exist in ambiguous status as going back and forth in life like you can here. No, he becomes professor. And there you really are calling it one way or the other. Here, for many reasons, you can keep going back and forth. Yes?
I don't understand what type of leadership role they actually play in the community. What do you mean by leadership?
Meaning, you're now going to have a panel discussion answering questions at a synagogue, at Gohol Nechama. Who should be the panel? Some of this group would say, no, it should be us academics. It should be one philosopher, one historian, and one psychologist, and we'll leave the rabbis out of it. And Rav Sherlo is going to say, Mapitom, you don't do that. So he gets himself on the bill. But
also, another thing is that are the universities in Israel challenging the model out of the European universities in the sense of the more contemporary when it comes to more postmodern?
Okay. Hebrew U is one of the last great German universities. It is not more modern than anything. Tel Aviv is a very modern, cutting-edge university with departments of film and criminology and, regular American majors. Bar Ilan is got its own story, but no, in the end, Avi Sagi became professor of hermeneutics and cultural theory, which is basically saying, let's take someone who's teaching Jewish philosophy and letting them teach philosophy, which is not making it cutting edge in the world.
So we got modernity.
That's right.
Does that have to do with the university we're doing?
Yeah. It had to do with that because for a lot of them, the they went straight from 1920s philology. Professor Shlomo Pinas at Hebrew U was very much the philologist. And they skipped all the way into contemporary issues without anything in between. What? Yes.
How does Professor Kantovich's writings about the historic role that she wrote in Office Critique of David Hartman play a role in the rise of that Timothy? Or does the movement push it aside because they hold Hartman? It's one thing. At the same time, what's the role of Professor Sperber in this movement?
The former, I don't think, plays a major role, just, you know, because it's just not there. They're not thinking in those terms. The halachic question is not their first and foremost question. But the latter question of Professor Sperber is, he's one of the few really who played Rabbi Doctor, because he was rabbi of Yad Tamar in Rehavia for many years. In which he would attract everyone for his historic sermons. And at the same time, that's right. But he's seen as one of that post-67 generation. He's not seen as leading on this new charge.
And one last thing about Professor Sperber, again about Tamar Ross.
I'm going to get to Tamar Ross. Let me get there right now. You're jumping ahead to questions I'm getting to. So let me talk some more a bit. A new institution that came to be was Beit Marashah, which combines university and Beit Midrash. You enter it post-Hezder, post-Yeshiva. They give you a master's, and they encourage you to go on for a doctorate. Well, they're now producing many of the principals and assistant principals out there. The major names there is the one who gives shiur of Brandeis, who gives shiur on the narrative of the Talmud, teaching you how to avoid lumdus and conceptualization and go for the basic narrative read. As he teaches, there are seven mems from basic milim to no philology, all the way to the seventh and most important mem, mashma'ut. What does it mean today? So they teach a very narrative, literary, historic approach to the Talmud, and they're encouraging people to use it in chinuch. They get a master's there. Beni Ish Shalom is the head of it, and he presents a liberal vision of Rav Kook, a very liberal vision of Rav Soloveitchik. He was also, Beni Shalom, involved in pushing for things like greater conversion, liberal conversions for the Russians.
Beni Shalom.
And that we have to have a strong Misrata Datot and respect all religions. Beit Marsha also holds conferences on Machshevet Chazal, run by Alon Goshen Godstein, and they include Chassidut in the curriculum. And this is like some place you go after your first degree and after head there for a few years. They pay you before you're ready to, and you teach part time elsewhere before you're ready to go out and become a principal somewhere. They're doing very well. Chanukah Hatkolot has already come up for women. Someone whose name has come up at least twice today's class is Professor Tamar Ross, who recently put out a book on feminism and orthodoxy. And she believes that we live in a postmodern age. There is no longer any foundations. There is no grounds. There is no certainties. There are no appeals to certain meanings of texts anymore. It is all up for our own personal understandings. She also believes in progressive revelation, using the Shla and the Piasetzner's Kabbalistic models. She's going to extend that to today, saying that we've got to listen to the voice of revelation today, because the Shla says there is revelation in every generation. She reads Rav Kook in a very liberal way. Her articles about Rav Kook point out these passages where Rav Kook says things like, we can't think about things in primitive ways anymore. The medievals could think about things with flat earth and without science. We today have to understand modern science and evolution. We have to understand all modern philosophies. Rekama Ross says, in our day and age, if we're going to take Rav Kook seriously about living in the current age, then we have to take feminism and postmodernism seriously. She also believes there's going to be a new women's Torah that's going to be more literary, agadic, emotional than the old man's Torah. Her own daughter teaches in Pelech.
She teaches that.
What? Yeah. It's a girl's high school. If you know it, it's, you know. What am I else a minute? Okay. And she has a very influential voice within these circles. In many ways, also being one of the senior people like Ravitsky, who gets to make hiring decisions and, you know, sits on committees of conferences of who gets to speak. Yes?
What does it mean if someone like Tamar Ross or Shigar gets up and he says that we live in the postmodern age and everything before that is, you know, totally different? What does that mean vis-a-vis their old conception 10 years ago about messianism? In other words, are they saying we live in like some kind of anti-messianic era, some kind of like, you know, proto-messianic era where...
I mean, are they still in some funny Hegelian way always responding to the spirit of the times?
Or even like a backwards example, like, even if you're going to say the condition of post-modernity is qualitatively worse, but it's still so different than everything else, we have to read everything differently than everyone else ever.
Yes, they think in those terms.
But why? Isn't that just like habits of mind? Like either, you know, Kushnet is going to be Mashiach or living in...
No. Is that we can't have to put away, they're coming from a, we have to put away our immature perceptions and think in more, you know, that's the whole university angle, we have to think in more contemporary angles. Yes?
Do they, those who tap post-modernity and then go from there, do they see that the eventual rope that hangs themselves with and that there are past lessons that's predicted by this?
No, because they're assuming that this is going to, like any new point, they're assuming that things are going to forever keep changing, keeping up with things, and time will tell what occurs.
Some things will stay.
Yeah, but some things will change, and I assume there will be reactions against this at some point.
So they're dealing with the Messianic
sense. That was the same as his question. The answer is time will tell, because let's ask, meaning, on one hand, your questions they haven't gotten up to responding yet to. What? They know it, meaning I've, you know, had conversations with some of these people in Shavuot rides, you know, things I'm not saying in class. They know some of the questions. You know, we will see where they actually go and what statements they will make. Yes.
Stress the relevance of the ideas of autonomy, specifically in context with the Orthodox forum,
yeah,
the Tzimcha Chadashim forum, and how they each took separate perspectives.
That's it.
And I was just wondering if prior to the Tzimcha Chadashim, did form, did Israeli Orthodoxy, whatever you want to call it, the group, did they take Tamar Ross's vision of autonomy, or was that only too focused on feminism that they...
They came out, and the first one was in 96.
Right, I'm
and she... Her what?
Her original articles.
Were all posts. I mean, they went all from a Rav Kook collectivism to a Dati Machadishim individualism.
And that works to just change.
Even she herself used to teach classes in Balaya Musar and the Musar movement, and the most important questions were the, you know, can we find Kantian ethics? Is there an ethic outside of halacha? Meaning all this sort of, you know, for those who don't know, Tamar Ross is a Wogelenzer. Don't make all the connections. Cousin.
Her father. What? Her father's blood brain. Judas, her cousin.
So she went from a much more modern approach to this postmodern one. So let's sum up so I can get down to the engaged yeshivish approach. Their curriculum, like the traditional merkaz, includes Bible, Midrash, and Halacha. But they also include academics, postmodernism, film, art, poetry, and they're going to give deference now to universal philosophy over particular machshava, meaning now Michael Walzer can take precedent over Maharal. Two, they are clearly not the yeshiva world. They don't feel connected to it. And they try, like Yair Shelag, just to say we're Datiyim, we're Chovesh Kippah, we're Bogrei Tichon Adati. They find all sorts of ways to even actually lessen their status and even be, you know, to say, you know, we are something new. Their attitude to the laity is one of everybody has freedom, and this will vary between the freedom you will now find in Petah Tikva to now go to movies, go to museums, go to university and dress the way you want, to the incredibly, incredibly liberal, experimental social world of the German colony, which actually is more experimental and more liberal than the Upper West Side. The Ein Makom L'Arich.
Yes.
In terms of modern issues, it's individuality, the self, liberalism, democracy. Palestinians, white slavery, social justice. The image of a modern rabbi is, as Rav Sherlow said, to close the gap between the ideal and reality.
Are they producing them?
Hmm?
Were they producing rabbis?
Where?
Yeah,
you also go through. And therefore they stress the importance that halacha has to be transparent. Everyone should see all your steps. Halacha should be humanistic and concerned for the people. So a modern rabbi is not someone who has, unlike what we've been, has nothing to do with specifically mastering any corpus of Wissenschaft or needing a BA or a PhD. But it's to be this sensitive person who deals with the issues of modernity. Philosophy, they're gaining everything under the sun at once. Their attitude toward Gentiles is universalistic, rejection of Merkaz.
Who are the Gentiles?
Hmm?
Who are the Gentiles?
Who are they? Oh, that they have real. They ask questions like, "What should be our attitude toward Islam and Christianity in the state of Israel? Should we? What do we deal with our experiences going off to India, to Hodu?"
Do they deal with? Is it a question if they're doing the Avodah Zarah by going to India, like, or they're just going? And
they're going, and then therefore, what does this now, this confrontation with this, you know, great culture mean to us? They openly say social factors affect halakha. Now, education, while they're pro-creativity in high school and university, because Israel is a very different world than America, education on no level is universal there, so everybody's coming with different trajectories of what your education is. And there's a whole new series of Hesder Yeshivot, as we spoke about. Now, back to Mr. Zuckier's question about, you know, fighting the conservative movement. There are many people in centrism that would think this entire lineup is conservative by current polemical standards. I mean, so it's not that it's a lack of their, it's the whole approach is very different. Okay, any final questions on the Zadim HaKadashim? Yes?
Does the conservative yeshiva play any role in anything, or do people go more towards Harvard, more towards Shelley?
So the answer to give you is it played a role in the 1980s, briefly, when some of these people taught there. Meaning when they were first founded, they originally hired some of these people and they taught there the first year or two. However, the conservative movement in New York and America took charge. Joel Roth became the Ram of the conservative yeshiva. It had a New York imprimatur. These Israelis were out. So there was a brief moment where they converged. But there was a brief moment because the America wanted to be American. This didn't sound American. This didn't sound right for the RA and JPS. So too when it comes to the new program at Machon Shokin, there was a brief moment, whatever it was, 86, 87, when there was a brief overlap. But then once again, the rabbis they produced went off taking congregations of Chilonim, and they wound up, you know, it became a world catering to Chilonim and accepting that your congregants are driving to Beit Knesset and eating non-kosher in a way that this crowd doesn't. Yes?
What then defines an Orthodox for the purpose of this course? What language are they speaking? Not a halakhic language, and not a... in other words, are you saying that this is just...
Have you now gotten nothing from the course and are now saying Shadal is not Orthodox because he's not speaking your centrist language?
No. What I'm saying is that you obviously have a reason for including
it.
Did
Dati Mechadashim? Yeah. Same principles and part of the same diet, because there was no point that wrote them out.
They people just didn't realize what was happening and like 10 years later. Like,
no, there's a clear point that they are still the fact that they can still get up there and in the end you can still have for better or worse them still being seen as part of now the rabbinic establishments.
Would this have scenario changed had Ruckman taught also in the university setting when he moved to Israel and he had been achieved by Angus Bosso?
It's hard to speculate because once again those days the university was secular and every degrees, you know, people were taking degrees in, you know, whatever, metallurgy and forestry. I mean, it wasn't an American university to start with. Yes.
Between the realms of like Beit Midrash, academia, education, what would the role of religious studies and group comparing religion play in all this?
It plays a role. It plays a role. There are people who are involved in it, and then we could talk about the specific roles of specific people like Aron Goshen Gottstein and others. Yes.
Do you think they see like the concept of the savior that they
is, the answer is, there's been work people have been doing in isolated places. This is going to be the first time we're all really coming together to see. Out of it, I'm sure there'll be people who are dropping out saying, this is not for me. Other people will take part, and we'll get a sense of it afterwards.
I'm saying
yes. Yes. But what is, how to formulate that? once again, you can read my paper on the web up at the BEC site and see my formulation of it. What? Boston College. That paper is now over 200 pages and deals with whole chapters on Eastern religions. But what? So the answer is there will be a wide range of positions running everywhere, but it is really being run through, I think Israel is more of the driving force in this than America. Yes?
Yair Shalek said, when do we get to the point where people are saying,
we have gotten to that point already. They have articles in these journals that will include things like, is a datlash, a dati l'shavar, someone who's given up religion, is he still part of the dati community? Because culturally and everything he still is, and likely to still marry someone who's dati. They had article debates whether the conservative movement in Israel should be seen as part of the dati im chadashim. They've had debates about whether people who are clearly, you know, on the fringes or publicly avarianim, are they part of the community? They're willing to actually have debates on these topics. And they're going to, those debates are more by regular people, and I stress more the higher ideologies, but they're fascinating reading because they're going to open all the questions. What are the boundaries? Are there boundaries, or is it all Barafel, yes.
So just why is there no interplay between them and in a hemorrhaging Haredi world in Israel? Why don't they, why is there no Chaim Gradas why is there no movement, for a Haredi people to come to that kind of shame or to be more open and
Because that's the Israeli dynamics, is that they were so negative and so opposed. Even if you were a Litvak on some level, you were somewhat rational and normal, we're going to see, in a way that the Haredi world in Israel is not. So, for example, the organizations for Chozrim L'Sheila, Hillel, and others are really going to ease you how to enter the Chiloni life. Even if you still keep some of the Masoret, it's a different dynamic. You may have a role in life. You can play some catcher in the Rye for Harnoff. Yes, then I must go on to a gate to Shemesh.
Okay, while you mentioned Heptarius and Frigius and all those people, what is the role of, establishing sanctioning drug use?
Establishing?
The sanctioning, meaning. Is it fine?
It's not, because in Israel they're very serious about penalties. So the answer is yes, it goes on. Yes, it goes on, and yes, it goes on. But in Israel they really will. You do not want to wind up in jail. It's not like America.
Okay.
So you're not going to write articles about it. Here you can write articles and say, my experiences of it. And no one's going to go after you. There they will. Okay. Now the engaged yeshiva position. First of all, I find the engaged yeshiva position a lot like the study of Chassidut, in which there are hundreds of little speeches and articles, each mutually affecting the other one in a very close sequence to one another. Meaning somebody could give one speech at a conference, and then it could find, an excerpt from it can find its way into 10 books, and then the authors of those, all those 10 books, will then be at the next conference, possibly at the same table. And then some of the editors behind the scenes are the editors of every single one of these. And so rather than, you know, fully emerged books, I mean, so unlike, you know, Rav Leich and Rav Levine, whose opinions on halacha will emerge fully blown at the end of the day, and then we can compare notes. Here we're finding, you know, single lines affecting other people back and forth. Also, I'm going to take no questions now for the next 20 minutes, which will give the chance, those people will have to leave to go to Yaradeya, that's fine, but for 20 minutes let me talk in general, because it's going to foreshadow a lot of where we're going. First of all, I am not dealing with the world of Ksav Sofer. There's been no good scholarship done yet on it. But know that the idea that the world of Ksav Sofer was obscurantist and all modernity was in the world of Rav Hirsch is not true. That world of Ksav Sofer, meaning Ksav Sofer started giving speeches in German, people went into professions, people started getting secular educations. That world has yet to be taught, but that's in Litha. But I mean the world in Hungary and Pressburg, the world of all sorts of diverse figures, starting from the Maratayas on, have yet to really been looked at. I mean, people who were fellow travelers with Ksav Sofer, but were quite modern. His scholarship has been biased. Keep your eyes open for, you know, later stuff coming out from Professor Michael Silber and others and their students. So too the world of Rosenheim in Germany, the German Polalei Aguda, and parts of the German Aguda world in America were also quite modern at points. They've yet to be studied. And so we're not dealing with them. Let's talk instead about America. And in this, like I said, you must hold your questions for 20 minutes because I think a lot of this is going to come up. Okay, we're going to tell three parts of the story. What went on in the 60s and 70s when the yeshiva world moved out of Brooklyn and into wider America. Part number two, the 80s and 90s, when you now start seeing a very engaged, forward, journalistic yeshiva world. And then finally, the events of the last decade, in which where Rav Shach disbanded Polalei Aguda and really made many statements and his followers like Rav Yashiv against science. We are now and only now beginning to see ripples of that, that the American yeshiva world, for example, in the Slifkin affair, begins to see that they're on some other side, that they're not going to reject basic science anymore. But that's all, you know, that's going to continue growing. Okay, three moments. But let's go back to the first moment. If you're living in the 1950s, the yeshiva ideology of Rav Aaron Cutler and Rav Huttner is isolationist. It is very enclosed in Brooklyn. It is very all about Torah. It's about Das Torah, about the Holocaust, and about Zionism. You will find popular books like Rav Victor Miller criticizing basic science. You know, not that you show evolution is not true, but all of science is just not true. Come the 1960s, you have several events, including one, yeshivas Jews moving out of the suburbia. Two, specific events and polemics that I'm not going to go into that occurred in Tells in the 1960s, specifically over their elementary school being too much of the old style, spare the rod, spoil the child, and them setting up a new school following new educational principles. Other changes will be figures like Leo Levy as a Poole Aguda, a German who now presented why science is good and answered up all of Rav Aaron Cutler and Rav Victor Miller and even the critiques of the Ksav Sofer, reversing things and now saying science is completely value neutral and mutter, and it's humanities that are a problem. The world of Ksav Sofer and the Arofaner, many times said just the opposite. And we have the rise of Kirov, okay, as an activity of doing outreach. Let's now take some specific names and people. Some specific events that led to this change is one, Chafetz Chaim now sending guys out to L.A. and Rochester, and specifically you're taking it out of Brooklyn and then says, you know, Queens too, right. Sending them out into the world. Two, you have Rav Yaakov Weinberg at Neir Yisrael saying a certain confidence that yes, you can get a parnasa and you can go out and deal with modern issues, deal with the world going on, get a job, live in a much broader, deal with issues of ordinary life, and it's going to produce a very strong generation of graduates, those who knew him. It will have Rav Kamenetsky telling his students to be normal. Very unquantified, but as clear directive, you've got to be normal. And it produced many very normal Talmidim. It includes, and I can mention other names that are just not my point. You know, whether the role of Zelig Epstein and the fact that Nova Minster went to Brooklyn College and all that. The point is, it's all part of it. There was a message of more of normalcy that was starting to be taught. I mentioned the Tursky's already, very pragmatic, all the cousins going out and getting degrees. What? It has to do also with the OU not wanting to be swallowed up by the RCA and REITs, started balancing itself between the other yeshivot and REITs. OU started balancing itself. No, even going back to 1950, they started balancing, trying to play, keep everyone included. I understand, but it's a fact that he didn't object to it, but it occurred.
But he said, like, this is what OU is from.
He was at YU.
Yeah, that's right. Can you guys let me talk for a few minutes here? It also, in a very significant way to think, is that a lot of the pulpit rabbis in places like Queens that went to Neir Yisrael and went to Chafetz Chaim and Chaim Berlin were seemingly modern Orthodox in the 60s because their congregants were very, very non-observant. And they reemerged as Zaydis, reaffirming their yeshivish identity, or their children reaffirmed their yeshivish identity, even though they had grown up in very modern Orthodox communities. I mean, a lot of the people who are coming forward You know, when they first started out, in their pulpits in 1960, they started out going to RCA conventions because the AA wasn't very much of anything. They were, you know, turning to the Rav. They were one thing, but then as they grew older, all of a sudden they went back to their roots, and that plays a role. Let's talk about other things in terms of the literature this is now going to produce. It will produce a huge amount of pop psychology and self-help. Leading it will be someone with a very credible doctorate in psychology, Rav Avram Twersky, who did serious work with substance abuse patients, and then turned to create really one of the founders of the genre. It will include figures like Beryl Wine, starting as part of the Jewish Observer crowd. As much of the Jewish Observer crowd, the younger writers, continued writing as they grew older, but they clearly, the fact that they were regular journalists for their whole lives, carried on. So Beryl Wine is now going to write popular history. It will be creation of Eisha Torah, less important for creating Balei Tshuva, more important for now saying, giving classes on the 48 ways of love and saying to say Berachas HaTorah on it, and creating, now they're coming out as volumes, lots of articles and journalism about the family, the self, seeking American life. It will now be the rise of a generation of journalists like Avi Shafran and Jonathan Rosenbaum, who are engaged and dealing with the modern world. You have the point that you have to skip from...